The Breakfast Club.
Adam White is looking like he's ready to go to the yearling sales today. Looking sharp. Very, very sharp. He's back again on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, Adam.
We know that's not true. Good morning to you. I'm not looking sharp at all.
You are looking sharp. You've got the jeans and the boots on and the vest. It's a very yearling sale look.
It is a little bit, but it doesn't really match. The cap's an old Callaway golf hat.
But it could just pretend it's a Coolmore or Rosemont Vinery or Woodlands. They still got Woodlands? Yeah. No, that's been sold.
I don't know.
Or one of those big studs on it. And that's you absolutely in the frame for a yearling sale sort of fella. I can see you putting your hand up late. In fact, you wouldn't put your hand up. There'd be just a little nod.
They're just a nod.
A subtle nod.
Acknowledgement. I'm in. Yep. I'm in. I'm ready to go. And I'm armed and dangerous.
Take down Gay Waterhouse for the top bid. That's what you do.
Exactly right. But it's one of those things at the moment. I'm sure a lot of people are experiencing this around Melbourne, around Victoria at the moment, where we're sort of having to work from home. And in our situation, it's sort of come in, do your job and leave. Well, obviously, we have the ability at the moment to come in and broadcast from RSN Towers here in the city. That could change any moment. So, obviously, I still can't remember how many months we did it from home last year. But at least 3 or 4 months, I reckon.
Yeah, it was over 100 days.
Yeah.
So it's at least 3 months.
Yeah, but we're just obviously on the edge at the moment of not really knowing. And I know that there's a number of people that would be listening this morning that it's doing their head in as to, you know, we're right on the edge. We're supposed to be getting out of lockdown tonight. That's not going to happen, but we don't know how much longer we're going to stay in lockdown. People are, including my family, we're trying to homeschool kids and all that sort of thing. So we're just in that state of flux at the moment, which is, I'll be honest with you, it's hard to deal with.
No, it's certainly not ideal. Certainly not ideal, but it is what we've learned to become accustomed to, unfortunately. So we've got a level of familiarity with it, not something you want to be familiar with, but there is a level of familiarity with what's going on at the moment. So it does, I'm not sure that creates any comfort, but it does give us a chance to at least know how to do it.
Yeah, so you talk about what I'm wearing. I wanted to just wear the trackies and the hoodie and just come in and do the show and head back home and whatever else. And I end up sort of half doing that, not fully doing that. Anyway.
Why would you half do that?
Because I just did, because I couldn't find things. And
that's how the shoes are gone again. You missed the shoes again.
It was just, I couldn't really, Anyway. Anyway, but the interesting thing, Half, is at the moment, I reckon, is a little bit around the COVID latest, and I think we're up to 320 exposure sites now in Victoria, mainly obviously in Melbourne, but some up. Yeah, our friends up in Mildura, that they're dealing with an outbreak of sorts at the moment. But it's just a lot of sporting topics at the moment, issues we're dealing with where we're not entirely sure whether it is or it isn't happening.
What do you mean?
The Liz Cambage situation.
Well, that's happening.
Yeah, but, well, she's not playing, but why is she not playing? In cricket at the moment, Mitchell Starc is representing Australia, but a lot of his other big-name teammates are not. What impact is that having on the team? So with the Cambage situation, what impact is that having on the team? Is it a good thing she's not there, or is it a bad thing she's not there? We've got the situation with Alistair Clarkson and Sam Mitchell. Is there tension, or is there not tension when it comes to the handover period? There's a lot of talking points at the moment where we don't really know exactly what the actual truth is. And I don't think we ever will necessarily either.
Well, this is the beautiful thing about sport. Lying is the second language of sport. Certainly in the world of AFL footy, you never fully know the truth. But you're right, it's interesting you raise that because I was thinking last night when I heard the stuff about Clarko and Mitch and this mediation session that they were supposed to have had last Wednesday. About how that level of detail gets out of a meeting with, I imagine, a very small number of people. And then, B, how much of that is the 17th conversation down the line, the Chinese whisper, which is the purple elephant out the yellow fridge, which was, they had a cup of tea together, becomes the purple elephant yellow fridge conversation. So you wonder where it actually starts.
Exactly right.
And where it actually finishes to the point where it's broadcast. It's interesting. It is interesting. That does fascinate me, that whole scenario, though. Two bulls in the paddock. It can't work well, I don't think.
Well, there's not too many people, either Hawthorn people, of which you are one of those, and there's been plenty of them that have been asked about it, whether it will work or not, that know the two individuals well, there's not too many that say it's going to work.
It does, yeah. Well, and on the back of Caro's comments last night on Classified, have we got those? We have got Caro from Classified last night. Let's play them before we get too deep into this, because I did find it very, very interesting.
It was last Wednesday morning, Matthew. On that day, there was a mediation session held at the Hawthorn Football Club involving Sam Mitchell, Alistair Clarkson, the head of footy, Rob McCartney, I understand was there, and leading team's boss, Ray McLean. Now, the club has said to me today that it is not really fair to call it a mediation session, that Ray McLean is a consultant. Depending on who you talk to, there are several versions of why this meeting was held. There is a version which says that there was concern that Alistair had gone into his shell to a degree, was not coping with the announcement and was not necessarily happy about working with Sam. There's another version which says that they just needed to sort things out and that perhaps Sam wasn't particularly happy. Anyway, I'm told that during that meeting it became clear that Sam Mitchell would rather have clean air to have a fresh start next year without Alistair Clarkson by his side. When this meeting took place, and you can remind you, this happened after a pretty flattening loss against the Fremantle Footy Club, I think Alistair sort of went along with this, according to some sources at the Hawthorn Football Club, and it was put to Rob McCartney or Ray McLean to report this back to the footy subcommittee, a subcommittee that I think is chaired by Richie Vandenberg. Now, whether or not that happened, I don't know. This is what Justin Reeves, I should say, I put all of this to the Hawthorn CEO today, and he denies that there is any friction between Sam Mitchell and Alistair Clarkson, apart from the obvious. He says that we're happy with the way things are going, they're working well together. To be honest, they're actually working together better than we expected. Now, I'm not quite sure that is right, but what I do know is that what happened on the weekend was an unbelievable, unexpected, inspiring performance by the Hawks, and a decision, I think, by the feeling is from the players that Alistair has never been more engaged this year than he was after that win, and he is now digging in and is not prepared necessarily to leave despite Sam Mitchell's wishes.
So that was Caro on Classified last night with some fairly solid intel from
I'm a bit confused by all of that.
So they'd caught up last Wednesday with Rob and Ray from leading teams, Clarko and Mitch, to work out how this was going to work look going forward. Mitch said to Clarko effectively, or it came up, that probably best possible scenario is that I just take over next year, please go away, in general terms. Clarko sort of didn't overly take well to that, and then goes out and puts on a clinic with his boys. Not just him, but the boys put on a clinic on Saturday night to draw with the number one team in footy. So that would create another reason to stand your ground in that sort of scenario. It's got mess written all over it.
It does. But, yeah, it does.
It's got mess written all over it.
And as you said, and we've talked about this with the, if we go back to earlier in the season with the Nathan Buckley scenario where things were being leaked out of the football club, is it often when there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm.
And the reality is that there were comments that were coming out of the footy club that Nathan's not the same Nathan he was and there needs to be change and all these sorts of things. And a lot of that was denied vehemently by the players and by the football club. But by half year, Nathan wasn't there anymore. We talked about the St Kilda situation where there was consternation over players that had decided to stay in Melbourne and not go up to Queensland. And then that got very confusing as to how it all happened. And were people disappointed? Were they not disappointed? Were they even allowed to be up with their teammates? All those sorts of things. This is my point, is that through these times at the moment, now the Hawthorn's a different situation, but in other situations, a lot of it is because of the layering of COVID and whatever else, is that it's causing a lot of consternation in sporting clubs.
Yeah. It's certainly a watch this space situation, that one.
Do you think that Clarko will be there next year?
My gut feel is no. I have no reason to think positively either way that that's going to be the outcome. But my gut feel is no. There is just, as you say, there's smoke. I just feel that because they are such two bulls, the one paddock doesn't work. It's an old saying. It's worked in sport. It's been relative to sport for years. I just don't know how it works. I don't know how they can keep that together for another 12 months.
Mm. Do you think he'll just take a year off, or do you think he'll coach again next year? Because clearly there is at least one coaching position that is available?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I know all I know, and I don't know Alistair Clarkson very well. I know him to say good day and have a bit of a chat, but I don't know him well. But what I do know is there's not many more competitive people on the planet. And when those sort of people are given an ultimatum or put into a corner, boy, they fight.
Mm.
And are prepared to show you how good they are and what they're capable of. So that leads me to think that should another opportunity present, he'd probably jump at it if we got to that point. But I have no real read on the situation.
Yeah, because the reality of this situation for Hawthorn is that they aren't actually working to their own timeline, that this got forced upon them because of the Collingwood scenario. So under different circumstances, we wouldn't be having this conversation about Clarkson and Mitchell.
Yeah, true.
It was only that Collingwood sacked Nathan Buckley or they couldn't come to an arrangement that the door is knocked of Sam Mitchell's, are you interested? And then all of a sudden Hawthorn's playing to someone else's timeline. So that in itself makes it a hell of a lot more confusing than what it would otherwise be.
Well, you know who you can blame for all of this? Dom Sheed.
Yeah, that's right.
Dom Sheed. This is all Dom Sheed's fault.
It's like contract tracers. You go back to try and find the case one.
All Dom Sheed's fault. And you know what? He doesn't care. He's just walked away, wiped his hands of the whole situation with his medal, thinks he's pretty cool, and he's cost Nathan the job, and now Clarko and Mitch some tension.
Mm.
And he doesn't care. So it's a funny, it is a funny sliding door sort of moment, that one, from a couple of years ago. Because if they're premiership players and he's a premiership coach, Nathan Buckley, he's still coaching.
Definitely.
It's a funny game. And then Adam Simpson's probably under the pump.
Absolutely.
So it is a very funny game, footy. A couple of points either way can just determine a whole chain of events.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's weird.
But it is absolutely on that kick.
Yeah.
And it is like a COVID situation. It just spreads and goes all sorts of different ways. And you try and find the moment where it went a certain way. And in the case of Collingwood, and then certainly then the case of Hawthorn, it is that Dom Sheed kick. Who would have, you wouldn't be, if you're Esther Clarkson or Sam Mitchell, you're thinking, you know, Dom Sheed's probably cost me my job at Hawthorn.
If you're Clarko, you would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He's our man. We've been following his progress in the world of motorsport for a couple of years. Oscar Piastri is his name. He's the F3 champion last year, the reigning F3 champ. We think that was pretty cool. But now, after the weekend's performance at Silverstone, leads the F2 Drivers' Championship with Team Prima. He's joined us again on The Breakfast Club. Oscar, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Mate, you're on absolute fire at the moment. I caught a fair bit of your action across the weekend at Silverstone, because I was enjoying the sprint race format for the F1 as well, the first time we'd seen that. But you guys know a fair bit about that, and you had a great weekend, the points leader across the weekend. How are you feeling about the world?
Yeah, pretty good. Obviously, very strong weekend. A little bit disappointing to not clean up the feature race, but I think regardless, it was still a very strong weekend, and coming out championship leader sounds pretty good to me.
That sounds very good. Don't worry about that. I want to ask you about that because they were talking on the coverage, and I know nothing about this, Oscar, so you're going to have to educate me a little bit through the journey, about not being able to get enough power out of the car. How come your car didn't have enough power across the weekend to take out that feature advantage you said on Sunday?
To be honest, I don't really know what they were referring to in terms of power, but I in the feature race we just struggled for overall grip. I think the tyres just overheated a lot, so it made it really difficult to get good exits from the corners. And then I was stuck behind somebody on the alternate strategy. So they were they started on the harder tyres, and I'd already made my pit stop, and I just didn't have the grip to get past them. So I got stuck behind them for a long time, but maybe that's what they were referring to.
And when you're in the heat of battle, and you are, I imagine, well, I don't know, are you thinking about the points and what the result might mean for your overall tally during the race, or can you just not afford to think about that sort of stuff?
I mean, it's always important to think of the championship. I think now, being, you know, in the lead, you know, I can't really afford to take any silly risks, and I think that's how I've gotten to where I am in the championship now. I had a few moments at the beginning of the year that I probably should have conceded and didn't and lost myself some unnecessary points. But, I think it's always important to think about that and not throw any silly points because, especially with the format the way it is this year, it's super important to be consistent. And I think that's how I've got myself to the lead, being consistently there or thereabouts.
Yeah, well, you haven't thrown away too many points. I mean, you've scored in 10 of the 12 races this year to date, so your consistency has been pretty good. And in the feature on Sunday, you had Dutchman Richard Vershaw hunting you down in the closing laps. He's had fresher tyres than you. I want to know what it's like. Take us into the cockpit when you know that someone's coming from behind you to chase you down and how you have to navigate what's in front of you but also keep an eye on what's behind you. How do you do that?
Yeah, it was certainly tricky. He clearly had more pace than me and I think just more grip in general. I really had to work for it really hard. I qualified on pole and then had a good first few races, but I hadn't finished on the podium, so I really wanted to make sure I walked away from the weekend with a trophy in hand. So, I had to get my elbows out and it was really good racing. It was really clean and definitely hard, but always fair, which was great. Just trying to put the car in a good position and try and get good exits out of the corners so he couldn't overtake on the straights, which he got very close to a couple of times. But
did.
Yeah, my defensive skills just about held out.
So what happens now, Oscar? You're leading, so pressure comes with that, and people know who you are. They're after you now to try and get that spot. Does anything change from your perspective?
Not really. Like I said, I think the main reason I got, I'm in the championship lead is mainly because we're consistently at the front and always scoring points. We're not necessarily scoring the maximum points in every single race, which with this format, it's impossible to do that. You're always going to have to sacrifice one race in the weekend. I think being consistent is the way to go. And I think if I want to, keep the championship lead and then ultimately win the championship, then I have to keep that approach. And there's not really much point in changing that. In saying that, I can't be too cautious and give up positions too easily, because at the end of the day, you still need to get the maximum results you can in each race. If it's going to mean the difference between scoring a few less points or crashing, then you just got to take what you can get and not make any silly mistakes.
Dylan Sheila's from the Bombers and heading inside the inner sanctum of the Essendon Football Club this morning. It's not quite up the road at Tullamarine. He's sunning himself in Noosa at the moment. Dylan, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Going okay up there, is it? Are you okay?
Well, even better now that I heard that my good mate, Alex Kerr, is going to be captain of the country.
Oh, yes.
It's great news. So I'm thrilled about that.
I'd forgotten about the link there. Yes, of course. To GWS Giant Superstars as young men.
He's gone on to be a better thing with his day. So it's great to see him do a little work.
Because you were housemates, weren't you?
Yeah, we moved in together in that Nepal season when I moved straight up to Sydney. So we got to know him really well. And like I said, then he moved on to bigger and better things.
It's quite remarkable that your housemate, playing NEFL footy for the Giants, is now captain of Australia.
It's a good effort.
I know. Oh, it's amazing. There's been a few stories out of the GWS footy club where guys have actually done a bit of a code switch and gone on to achieve some pretty impressive things.
Well, that's nothing more impressive than the captain of Australia in cricket. So that is a very cool thing. Where are you at the moment? Are you in a little breakfast buffet situation? I hear some noises in the background. Don't go getting yourself caught in a tier one exposure site, Dylan.
No, how's the timing on it? So I'm just getting a takeaway coffee because I can only get takeaway coffee as the AFL has put restrictions on the boys. And someone's got one of those leaf blowers right next to me. And I'm actually trying to walk away, which keeps... I think I might have shook her then. So,
how's that news gone down? The whole GWS Sydney thing from the weekend. I mean, Josh Dunkley got caught down here with an upgraded site, and he's going to have to quarantine for 14 days. Are you a bit on edge, you blokes, about where you go and what you do?
Yes, very much on edge. Well, we had a few of our boys
getting a bit of trouble as well. So they're doing 14 days of quarantine. It's just, so many moving parts of the situation that when you think you're safe and you're in the clear, and then, you know, what obviously pops up and is on the list, you've been in it, you find yourself in trouble.
Where are you now? I can hardly hear you.
Really?
Someone's confiscated your phone.
I've got the Apple AirPods in, and I'm just I found a quad now, so I'm not sure why it's not working.
You're drifting in and out.
You're in it. It's not too bad. We'll stick with it for a bit. We'll see how we go. How is this edition of? It's not so much hub. Well, it sort of is hub life now. You're not allowed to do anything, but on the road again for a couple of weeks as well. You're not playing at the minute, although you can't be too far away from what I'm hearing. How's your world up there at the moment?
Oh, look, we're just sort of rolling with punches at the moment. We had 3 hours to pack our bags and get out of Melbourne. We moved up to Brisbane. Then after one night, we moved to the Gold Coast, where we remained against North Melbourne. And then post that game, we've relocated to Noosa for what we think is for the next two matches. But then there's a slight chance we could be on the move again. But we're just, as a footy club, we're staying flexible. Just trying to enjoy, you know, the opportunity to get out of Melbourne and play footy. Personally, yeah, I'm just, you know, got the opportunity to keep training with the guys and, you know, stay around the footy program and hopefully make a return soon.
So where are you at? Because we were kind of thinking about now you'd be ready to play. I remember you saying quite a while ago now that you're ahead of schedule. Where do we find you at the moment in regards to your comeback?
Yeah, so almost, you know, ready to declare myself fit to play. Just trying to work out what that pathway looks like coming back. I'm not actually quite sure what the VFL league is doing at the moment, but our VFL boys didn't actually play for points on the weekend. So we're just trying to figure out if I'm going to go through that pathway or just try to accumulate some really good training with the AFL guys and make a straight return there. So conversations I need to have with the coach before I go about it.
So conceivably, with all the issues with the VFL competition, that could actually cost you, or do you still think that, as you said, if you train hard enough, you might be able to find a way to get back into the senior team without having to play at VFL level?
There's different ways to go about it. You can get some experience and play a natural game of footy, or you can manipulate your own training a bit, you know, in terms of the strength of the conditioning department, and they can really manipulate your training loads to get exactly what they're after out of you. So there's, you know, just things to sort of be careful when you're returning back after a long stint out of the game, and, you know, in terms of hamstring and calf and tendon loading, make sure that when I come back that I'm not at risk of doing a soft tissue injury and things like that.
So how exciting is it for you to say that you're on the verge of returning when the team is in finals contention? I mean, they currently sit inside the eight at the moment for the first time in over a year. 5 games to go. You can still have a meaningful part in the season, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it makes it more exciting, that's for sure, than, you know, being returning to a team that's not in the eight. So, yeah, I'm certainly excited by the idea that, you know, we're in a position to play some finals footy.
Has the messaging changed from internally, from Ben Rutten or any of the coaching staff about what you might be able to achieve now, considering, as Whitey says, where you found yourself with 5 rounds to go or 5 games to go?
No, nothing's changed. You know, we haven't even spoken about, you know, expectations or what at the end of the season is going to sort of look like for us. We're purely focused on the present. You know, so that last week that was getting ready for North Melbourne amongst all the drama of relocating, and now our attention is focused on the old mob, the Giants, and, you know, putting our best performance for the weekend.
Well, it says a lot of people looking now at the Bombers from outside that perhaps weren't paying as much attention or thinking that there was too much on offer for the Essendon Football Club this year. But you are playing very, very well. And it's on the back of the emergence of, well, players developing is probably what it is. And there's no greater story than Darcy Parrish this year. We've spoken about him before. But who are the other ones in your eyes that have been sort of the linchpins of this new era for Essendon, hopefully?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Darcy there, and his rise to he's playing with is pretty uncommon, and it's, you know, great to see him not just playing a good level of footy once every now and then, but he's played it across the whole season. But yeah, we've got other guys that have, you know, made some pretty impressive rises, aren't getting the attention that he's getting, and you know, you get Jaden Laverde, who's, you know, gone from playing forward to playing, you know, a key part in our back line this year. It's been really impressive. He even got the skipper who's gone back and is playing, you know, some really impressive footy off half back there, and you know, been really excited to see, you know, what he's been able to achieve this year, which has been great. Yeah, and you know, obviously we developed them, but they sort of walked in when and were pretty good. But Archie Perkins and Nick Cox have you know, just started their careers off pretty well.
Let's touch base with one of the biggest names in Australian soccer. John Aloisi is back in charge of one of the A-League teams this time. Western United been announced in the last week that he's going to take the reins for the next couple of seasons, and that is good for business as far as we're concerned. He joins us on the program. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Good on you. You know, you're currently in hotel quarantine in Brisbane after covering the Euros on Optus Sports, so you've got plenty of time to talk to us. But how long has this been bubbling along, this opportunity at Western United?
Well, only a couple of weeks. I did an interview process a few weeks ago, and it was very thorough, of course, and they liked what they saw and heard. And so then it was pretty quick after that. It was a discussion about, you know, if I would like to join the club, and I saw how ambitious they were, and I'm very ambitious, and I'm excited to be back and coaching again in the A-League, and West United is the perfect fit for me.
You've been watching from afar and covering it from a media perspective for a couple of years. Has it got you the itchy feet? Are you seeing things now from a different perspective, having that media angle that you can take back to clubland as coach?
Yeah, you always do. You're always learning and you're always improving and evolving as a coach and also as a person. But you're right, when you go from the media side, you see it a little bit different. You can see, you know, sometimes when you take a step back and you reflect, you see that you could have done a little bit better, what you did well. And so, yeah, I've got that itchy feet. I'm ready to get back in and can't wait.
Will you be a better coach this time around? You've had two cracks with Melbourne Heart early doors, very early doors, and then at the Brisbane Roar for a couple of years. How are you different going into this campaign as a coach?
Oh, look, like I just mentioned, you know, you're always learning from your experiences. At Brisbane Roar, we had a very good period that were very close to winning. We were only 1 point away from winning the Premier's Plate my first year. Both those first two seasons, one game away from the grand final. So I just want to take it a step further. I want to make sure that build the right squad that can be competitive and make sure that West United, they fulfil their ambitions in doing well and trying to win trophies. And, you know, with my experience and the what I've learned over the years, I definitely feel that I'm the right person.
And, John, Western United, what was the attraction? You sort of touched on it earlier, but to get in there, what was it that you've liked watching as a media commentator and some of the things that you're keen to get in and sort of embrace what they've started?
Yeah, they're still building and, you know, they've put the foundation in already. Mark Rudin was there with the football department and I want to help grow that and help build that. And that got me excited because, you know, it's a very young club, it's only 2 years old. I've been involved in a young club before. I know what it's like and how you can build and help that. And you know, I mentioned about their ambitions and, you know, they want to do well. They want to compete. They want to be there competing with the Melbourne Victories and Melbourne Cities down in Melbourne, but also the big clubs around Australia. So that got me excited because, you know, it's easy to say, but that they're following up now with the players that we're looking at signing and talking about signing.
One man who knows about being captain is Jamie Cox. He's got over 18,000 first-class runs for cricket in Tasmania and for Somerset as well in county cricket. He was captain of both of those establishments, and he's got a very, very important new job at the MCC at Lords. He's been good enough to join us this morning. Coxie, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, Adam.
Now, you are currently the General Manager of Football Performance at St Kilda Football Club, and I read yesterday that the MCC announced you were going to be taking over the MCC Assistant Secretary Cricket and Operations position. What does all that mean, Jamie?
Well, firstly, I'm not in that role at the Saints at the moment, mate, but that was a role I was in at the Saints. So I'm now sort of looking after the AFLW program, as you do, in many ways. The new role... Yeah, look, it's a little complex. Basically, the cricket component it will look after the MCC cricket program. So the MCC is the most active cricket club in the world. Like, they play over 500 games a year.
Wow.
Ranging from some high-performance matches with some young cricket academy right down to some club events with a purpose to grow the game. And so that in itself is quite a big task. And something I'm looking forward to but secondly, the operations piece is even more exciting as it manages the operations of Lords, which is one of the MCC's, well, the MCC's major asset. The MCC own Lords, and to actually have the operational keys to that establishment is, I must say, pretty exciting. So, yeah, big job, one that I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, it's super exciting.
That's awesome.
Now, Jamie, our Media 11, or Concord Media 11, we comprehensively beat both the Crusaders and the Melbourne Cricket Club last summer. We probably need bigger challenges. So would you be able to organise a game at Lords between ourselves and the MCC? That you're the one that we need to talk to?
For the right price, Whitey, most things can happen. yeah, I'm open to bribes. I've said that quite openly over the next 6 weeks until I head off. But, look, it's... Obviously, there is a connection, and explaining to people that, you know, when you say MCC, most people over here think Melbourne Cricket Club. No, yeah. This is the Marylebone version, which, you know, they're quite a unique beast, you know, to be the guardians of the laws of the game and the spirit of cricket and to own the Ashes. They're really quite an eclectic club, and one that, you know, is obviously steeped in history and tradition, as is the Melbourne Cricket Club. So, mate, we do play a lot of those kind of fixtures. So I'm sure, again, if you can assemble your team and put a case forward, then it'll be up for consideration.
Oh, that's very excited. Half and I are both vaccinated, so we're ready.
We're ready.
So, Jamie, explain to those out there that don't understand, I guess, the significance of the MCC. It's, as you said, it's not just Lords. It's not just what all goes with that, but particularly around the laws of the game and even the role that you have, if any, in that space as well?
Yeah, so I'm coming to terms with it, but the MCC, I mean, historically the MCC was English cricket, and even as long ago or as soon ago as the I reckon about the 80s or even the early 90s, touring teams used to leave England as the MCC.
Yeah.
Remember those of our vintage seeing English touring teams with the egg and bacon stripes on?
Correct. Yes. Or the orange and yellow vest, cricket vests.
That's it. Yep. Yeah, and it was around that time that the English cricket role got handed over to the ECB and they got carved off to look after the Three Lions and to look after English cricket. The MCC have retained the other pieces, which, as you say, the laws of the game, the spirit of cricket. They own the Ashes and they own Lords. So it's you know, part of the role that I've been entrusted with is to find its niche, I suppose, is to understand where the MCC fits inside the English cricket ecosystem and the world ecosystem, for that matter, because they've got another sort of quite unique piece in that they have what they call a World Cricket Committee, which I'll be sitting on as well, which is a bit of a think tank for issues that surround the game and has some real luminaries that sit on it. So, you know, even that in itself will be a wonderful experience to, you know, to sit around the table with some of the great minds of world cricket and discuss, you know, issues of the day. So it's an interesting role and one which I will fully confess I don't completely understand, Scott. But something, you know, I can't wait to get my feet under the desk.
It sounds like a ripping job. How does this come about? Do you apply? Do they headhunt? Where does this start from?
Yeah, look, I've had a connection to some people in the UK for quite some time, and it's sort of just evolved half. I don't know. I've always seemed to have greater credibility overseas than I've had in my own country. it's something which I've probably resisted for a while, but now I've decided, oh, well, look, let's just hop on board and maximise it, because you know, the English game, I was lucky enough to have 6 years at Somerset, and they were probably the six, they were six thoroughly enjoyable years. We've still got great friends over there. You know, I love the UK. So to actually call it home for a period of time is not that daunting, but obviously, you know, the world in its current state makes it a little bit daunting. But I've always preached to my family, you know, to my kids, that life's for living, and, you know, it's an adventure. So get out there and get in it. And I can hardly turn back when this type of adventure turns up on the doorstep.
We'll do it like we have been, you know, the last 15, 16 months, and, you know, we'll prepare for any sort of scenario. At this stage, our expectation is still that the game is Friday, so we'll prepare like the game is Friday. We'll review as we usually do and as we can at the moment, and then we'll give the guys the best possible information to give them the best chance to win this week.
That is the voice of Nathan Bassett from the Port Adelaide Football Club. They are scheduled at this stage to play Collingwood Friday night to kick off round 19. It is subject to government conditions, though, because South Australian cases now have changed the parameters in Adelaide. Johnny Ralph is all across this and what it means for the AFL, not just that game, but the other games that are going to be affected or changed in round 19 from the Herald Sun and Fox Footy, doing great things. Buzz, good morning.
Hello, Half. Yeah, we should have taken more note when the fixture came out. What was it, 4:30 yesterday? It literally had an asterisk on those two games that will be played in Adelaide. And obviously, when another case, a third case, was announced last night, we all wondered what happened. And then in the last, what, half an hour, a fourth case there. So they're not in 3-day lockdown over in South Australia, but there are, you know, level 4 restrictions. And so what that does mean right now is that the AFL's on shaky ground, and yet still, you know, reasonably optimistic that it can use that. Well, it's called a sterile corridor, Half, but I think we need to come up with a different name for it. I don't know if it's a squeaky clean pathway or something, because the sterile corridor doesn't do it for me. But
the pristine pathway,
like, there are a good chance, yeah, to play. What it probably will mean almost certainly is no crowds at Adelaide Oval. And, you know, as we speak, the two clubs trying to get training exemptions to literally train ahead of those clashes on Friday for Port Adelaide and Saturday against the Hawks for the Crows.
So from what you know at the moment, certainly for Friday night, that will go ahead under strict conditions.
That's right, yeah. So and so Collingwood, Geelong, other clubs have been able to play when Melbourne's in lockdown, getting across there with the 60 hours of quarantine. So I think if both are in lockdown, it probably doesn't matter. Again, you know, really specific exemptions, no crowds, you know, all the rigmarole that we've seen for clubs on either end of the scale. Port Adelaide right now is still in lockdown, or is supposed to be coming out of lockdown, given they had those 48 hours from the Saturday game in terms of quarantine. They played whoever they played. God, it's all jumbled now. But you know, so that will help. But they played St Kilda, of course.
They did.
But, yeah, worst case scenario, what are we doing? We're dragging those teams into Melbourne and then they can't get back. So I think that will go ahead unless we see an explosion of numbers in South Australia.
So to add some context to those that have only just caught up with the news this morning, there were three cases detected in South Australia. So a guy that had been in Argentina had gone into quarantine in New South Wales. In Sydney, he goes back home to Adelaide and finds he's got the virus, and he spread it to two people he knows, I think two family members, Ralphie. But then as a result of that, he didn't know he had it. And like in the situation here, he's gone to a petrol station, he's gone to a couple of Dan Murphy's, he's gone to
Had to have been a Bunnings somewhere.
No, a Foodland shopping centre. He also went to the Tab.
Why wouldn't he?
And he went to a Chemist Warehouse. So he's gone to quite a few places, and that's why we're in this situation we're in South Australia, that they've got onto it incredibly quickly. And hopefully, the goalposts might change as late as this weekend, Ralphie.
Yeah, that's right. And look, the great Mark Stevens suggested that we should have a history in our app that would show us where we've been. I mean, for you and me, it'd be a pancake parlour, it'd be
Correct.
KFC, it'd be the golf
Correct.
Range. So, you know, as much as we can laugh about it, the reason why the AFL's forging ahead with this season is that, yeah, so we've got cases in South Australia, in Queensland, in New South Wales, in Victoria. You know, we don't seem able to, yeah, we're limiting it, but we're not, you know, reducing the numbers right now. And so the AFL's very strong stance is that we could get to a situation where everyone's in this New South Wales mode. What have we got, 4 or 6 weeks? Not to be alarmist. Let's get this season done. Now, they're not looking to expedite games and to crunch the footy frenzy, but they feel like, you know, putting 1 or 2 weeks for buys in would not help. As I say, what if it gets worse and we can't get this season done? Then we've got to find, you know, then we've got the AFL's doomsday scenario. And, that's why they'll just keep marching ahead despite these players, you know, missing games and very good players at that.
So are there? Does it get to a point, if it gets any worse, Ralph, and we talked about the Giants and the Sydney thing yesterday and the players that missed, that there starts to become a conversation about the integrity of this particular edition of the competition?
No, it doesn't. No. And look, I saw you know, a couple of CEOs yesterday saying, what's the tipping point here?
Yeah.
But you know, so what are we? We're still at a list of 40, aren't we? So, well, quite clearly, if you had, you know, the entire team had gone to a rugby game and then were not able to play, or the entire, you know, squad, well, they wouldn't be able to play a team. But yeah, I think what we're seeing now is, I think 13 of the 18 teams, you know, those in Victoria and a couple that are, you know, interstate, are on those enhanced protocols. So, you know, I put the point to the AFL, you know, yesterday. What if it happened in the grand final? You know, what if three or four of your best players weren't able to play? And they said the very strong point of view is that if you're an AFL player, in grand final week especially, you're training, you're staying at home, you know, you're not even going out to the supermarket, you're not even going out to the cafe. And so, look, if the price of, you know, your freedom as an AFL player, it is absolutely not an obligation, you know, it's a privilege to play football. Well, you probably just don't go down to the cafe and get your flat white. You know, you get the Nescafe, the Nespresso Gold, or whatever it is. That's just what's going to happen for you as an AFL player if you want to safeguard your ability to play every week.
Josh Dunkley's felt that. The poor old chili scrambled eggs, which I do quite like at any venue. He's gone the oat latte, which is controversial, and now it's a tier one exposure site.
Almost penalised for having an oat.
Well, no, I was just about to say, it's probably fair enough for the oat latte, Johnny Ralph, but that's the reality now for these guys, isn't it?
No doubt. And look, it's not even, you know, I was talking about AFLPA yesterday, you know, there's a couple of sites in Cremorne and Richmond, and they, you know, they were 15-minute exposure sites. They said they weren't even within the cafes. They were the where you get your takeaway coffee, milling around there for 15 minutes. Now, you'd be, you know, you had to be dead to be stiff. But they said that's how dangerous it is right now for you to be an AFL player when you can, you know, so quickly be, you know, a tier one site. So, you know, I think there'll be some players who'll struggle with that. But I also think that there's a lot of people who are struggling in lockdown. And if you want to be an AFL player earning an average of $300,000 a year, well, your wife goes out, or you just get the kids to run down to the coffee shop, or as I say, you're George cleaning it up, and you get in the espresso machine or the AeroPress or whatever it is. You just stay away from any site that could be a tier one exposure site.
Yeah, well, Cheeky Monkey is one of the exposure sites, which is in Swan Street, which is, by the way, they're very good hot chocolates, but it is a very popular cafe for the Richmond players, and I think some of the Collingwood players as well. But that just shows it's almost dumb luck whether you do or don't get yourself involved in an exposure site as it stands at the moment. Now, hopefully, Ralphie, with this lockdown, that those exposure sites drop dramatically quite quickly and we can get back to some sort of normality quite quickly. But at the moment, that's just not a reality.
No, spot on. And look, you know, it's almost, it's almost cruel that you spoke to Dylan Shield, you know, going up to Noosa. You know, yes, you can go up to Noosa, but you can't avail yourself of any of the issues there. They are still getting a takeaway coffee, but, you know, obviously the case numbers in Queensland and Noosa are, you know, next to nothing. But I thought it's almost like you know, throwing you at Augusta, Whitey, an open course, and then saying, hey, guys, you're not allowed to jump on and have a putt. You know, those guys aren't allowed to wander down and get a Betty's burger and, you know, go along the beach. Obviously, they can have a little walk, but effectively they're quarantined at their hotels. It's almost cruel, but, you know, that's what Essendon's doing, and that's what we're living under. So for Essendon, they're hopeful of getting back on Friday and playing that game against GWS next Sunday. I think it's almost certain not to happen. So the Sydney Freo game is, I think it's 12:35 on Sunday at Metricon. I think we'll see it the same as we saw it last Sunday, you know, Essendon versus GWS at 6:10, you know, as a doubleheader, yep, at Metricon Stadium with enough time to turn that game around.
Let's get into the mind of Rodney Eade in Coach's Corner on a Tuesday morning. He's been there, he's done that, just about every facet of Australian rules football. He joins us again today. Good morning, Rockets.
Morning, Daniel. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed. I want to know straight up, Rocket, how would you go as a coach dealing with these uncertainties of timings and venues and fixtures and all that sort of stuff? By routine, we're creatures of habit, Australian rules footballers, and coaches in particular, control freaks more often than not, Rocket, trust me. How would you go with all this?
No, I'd be okay. I don't know if people know too much about it, but I don't mind change. I cope with it okay. I'm not stuck in the one thing and be on the tram track. So I'd certainly cope. It'd be more about, I think, the players and the staff being able to, because there's going to be a lot within that who are just made that way that would actually struggle with it. So it's more about being able to get around those people, be able to work with them and ease any anxiety or stress. Or some people would say, if I haven't got routine, I'm not going to play well. They'd talk themselves out of that situation, as you would know.
Yep.
And you would have played with plenty like that. So it'd be more about the other people and working with it to try and get a result.
Do you think that would be the biggest challenge, full stop, at the moment, is the mind games? The psychology of coaching would really be coming to the fore now, as opposed to the tactics and the X's and O's?
Oh, sure, no doubt. There's no doubt about that. Like, to obviously swap three games, which was coming, but until you're until you're confirmed on that, it's only happened the last 24 hours. Some have got a flyer and they weren't going to fly. There's mini hubs, I suppose, if you want to call it at the moment. Some not seeing families. Everyone's in a different situation. If this doesn't fix itself, going forward, it may be even changed even more. Teams change, play within 5 or 6 days, then have to travel and et cetera, et cetera. So maybe as well with players getting COVID, it may cost one team a spot in the eight at the end of the season. Mm. That Sydney coped with it really well at the weekend, but there may be a situation, one of those six teams fighting for two spots, lose 3 or 4 players or 10 players and actually cost them a win or a chance to win. So there's going to be a lot of different situations. And I think, obviously, Sydney coped with it really well the weekend, and I think we've just got to take that situation that we're going to be throwing curveballs and we've just got to get on with it.
Kind of a question without notice, but with the way Sydney are going this year, just John Longmire's ability to adapt, and we saw him really emotional after the game against the Giants on the weekend, which is not something you would normally see. Is he not so much exceeding expectations, because he is a premiership coach, but his adaptability that we perhaps haven't seen as much in recent years from him?
Listen, he's coped extremely well. From the day John took over, I've been really impressed the way he's wanted to introduce kids.
Yep.
They were quite an older group, or blokes from other clubs, that there wasn't a lot of youth. Then they won the premiership. He's tinkered and turned the list over or introduced new players. Last year and this year, it's been en masse, really. There's quite a few players on that side now. I don't know a lot about it at all.
Yep.
And you hear clubs saying, oh, we're going with youth, give us some time, we're actually progressing. But they're winning games, and they're winning games against good teams with a lot of youth. But what they've introduced over the last 3 years, they're sort of the mainstay now. They've sort of, they're the experienced players who have played 40 or 50 games, which is a real credit to him. So to answer your question, I'm not totally surprised, but I think a lot of people would be, because he's seen as, he doesn't give a lot in the media, obviously, and he's a bit out of the old John Kennedy school. He's grown up under Dennis Pagan, actually don't give them much. But I think I think John's done a fantastic job, and it's not only this year. I think it's been building for a few years.
Hard to argue with that. Looking through the eight, Rocket, I think it's a fascinating period for the teams in the eight. Look at what's happened the last month. I mean, Melbourne have been a little bit off their tucker. Doggies have been up and down a bit. Power have been all over the shop. Brisbane's last couple of weeks have been interesting. The Weagles have been woeful up until the weekend. Essendon are sort of finding their mojo a bit. Then you've got Sydney and Geelong really is the only consistent teams through this period. Is the June-July thing the make or break for you to launch yourself to be a top four team or a top two team? Is that the most important phase of the year from your perspective?
It's a good question. I think maybe are we looking too deep into it, but certainly heading to finals, having some form and momentum can help the confidence. So again, back to that psychology question you asked early in the program about COVID, I think that certainly helps as well. So if you've got some wins now when there's difficult situations thrown at you, it'll give players confidence that they can cope with anything against good sides, lesser teams away, whatever the case may be. So I'm not too sure about in the past, but certainly this year and last year, I think in this period, is really strong to get some confidence and get some belief. It looks like those six teams fighting don't actually want to be in the eight. So anyone who gets there lose and they get down. And so they're not taking their chances. I mean, St Kilda had a good chance a week. I know it was against a good side. Fremantle got belted. Richmond now are back on after losing a few games. Essendon are in. The Eagles look as if they didn't want it. Now they've got up with a win. So there's a lot to play out. I thought the eight was just about set about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now the Giants don't really want to grab the chance either. So it'd be interesting to see. And you would think, on the point of your question, the seventh and eighth side, whoever get there, won't have the momentum when they get into September anyway. They'll actually just be making the numbers up the way they've been playing.
Yeah, there does seem to be separation from that top six, even higher than that now with the way Brisbane are playing compared to everybody else. Yeah. But we'll have to wait and see. Rocket, David Teague said after the game that the season shouldn't be seen as a failure if the Blues miss the finals again. What's your view on that, if you're a Carlton fan?
A Carlton fan. Again, it depends on expectations. I would think that they'd need to be threatening for the eight, as in a genuine threat for the eight, like miss it by a game or percentage and miss it by a game when they win their last two or something like that, that they're really a good chance that things have gone against them. If they look like, I think they're playing North this week, were they?
Yep.
So so if they can win that and then over the next 4 weeks be really competitive, win a couple of games and just miss, I don't think it'd be a failure. But if they drop away and say they win their last two or three games and miss it by 8 points, I think from a Carlton's fan's actual perspective, I think they'd be really disappointed, to be honest. Yeah. So it's sort of sitting on the fence a bit, but it's not so much making the eight, but they've got to be really threatening it.
Well, it's bordering on the best way to finish for Carlton. They've got North Melbourne, St Kilda, Gold Coast, Port Adelaide away, and then the Giants to finish. That's a pretty good run home, Rocket.
Yeah, that's right. So you'd think they should, to have a tick for the season, they'd want to win at least three of those five.
Yep.
At least three of those five, and maybe a fourth. If they can win four out of five, they're a chance for the eight. So therefore, you give their season a tick.
So let's touch base now with the Western Bulldogs. Defender Alex Keith's been good enough to join us this morning. Good morning, Alex.
G'day, guys.
Great to have you with us. Now, you've got one of the biggest games in footy coming up this week, 1v2. You've got the D's to tackle again, which you did earlier in the season in front of no one. You'll be doing it again in front of no one, which is a bit upsetting for us as footy fans. What's it like for you guys?
Yeah, it's strange. I still remember back to last year when we played the first game back from the lockdown with no crowd. And, when someone's having a set shot, I'm not sure I've heard a silence like it. But, it'll be interesting.
Does it take a bit of the edge off the contest, or are you that focused on what you've got to do in the next 5 weeks that you can't afford to think about that sort of stuff?
I think it's different. You definitely hear the voices of your teammates and obviously the opposition a lot more. So, in a strange way, it can lift the intensity from a personal point of view. But, we're just obviously shattered that we won't have our fans there again to play against the quality team of the competition.
How much of the build-up goes into what happened last time, or are you so different now as a 22 that it's not overly relevant, the performance last time around?
I think we look at it and there's lessons to be learned, but as you say, there's been a bit of change in both sides, and there's plenty on the line. Obviously some jostling for the top four spots and a bit of competition, so and then obviously the carrot of the top two as well, so plenty on the line for both sides. And, another learning opportunity, a bit of a way out from the end of the year.
There's plenty of news at the kennel at the moment, Alex, so I might just get you to run through a few things with your perspective on things, if that's okay. Firstly, Josh Dunkley finally gets back after his shoulder injury and then all of a sudden forced into isolation. How does that go down for him and also for his teammates? Because it's a blow, obviously, for you on the field, but even particularly for Josh.
Yeah, I know. He's at home putting the feet up, isn't he? But he's a hard worker and professional man, Josh. And he'll be fine. And I think just look at the positives as well, that he's got that game in on the weekend against the Gold Coast off the back of a long injury layoff. So it was crucial for him to play that game, as it turns out, because yeah, it would have been a lot worse if you had to isolate prior to that. Then it would have been an even longer stretch without having a game. So it's great to have him back. And, yeah, we know that, you know, after he isolates, he'll be back and adding a lot to the group.
And Toby McLean, this is terrible news to find out that he's done another ACL at training. I mean, I can't imagine what would be going through his mind at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's shattering. Shattering for Toby and shattering for us because he's such a popular member of the group and, well loved around the club. So, it's terrible news for him, but he's very quick to put things in perspective and he's got a really positive mindset. So I think he'll have surgery today, actually. So, yeah, today or tomorrow, I think. So, and then start the long rehab again. So, the boys are certainly feeling fine.
Absolutely. And Jamari Ugle-Hagan, now there's been so much talk about him throughout the course of the year, and now he's finally made his debut and he kicked those three goals on the weekend.
Excuse me. Mara.
Sorry, I forgot. That was an unforced error. I should have just said Mara. I would imagine you would have potentially played on him in pre-season or in match simulation at training. What's your views on him and what he did on the weekend particularly?
Yeah, so happy for Murray. Like, so much pressure on him as a top draft pick. And then, he got his first game, which was awesome. And, to see him have the impact that he did on the weekend was fantastic. Played a bit on him in pre-season and in training. He's got, lots of talent. And, he's a difficult matchup. And I'm sure as he keeps developing, he could become pretty scary for defenders.
There was some conversation last week that he perhaps wouldn't be in the team for the second week, but Luke got him in and played the psychology game beautifully with him, came out, kicked three goals, was really influential. Is he the kid that sort of needs a bit of a spur, or would he be fine just to roll through as normal people?
I think it's interesting in that position where he's sort of, one of the tall forwards or maybe the second or third tall forward. It can be really difficult. It's quite a fickle spot where you don't see many opportunities. So, to make the most of them on the weekend was awesome for him. And I think he can add a real, really different mix in that group in the forward line. So, as long as he keeps performing like that, we love having him in the team.
There's a fair few players going through the roster this year, the on-field roster this year. Are you close to beginning a settled lineup, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think some of that's been forced with a few injuries to some key personnel throughout the year. But I think as we move closer to the end of the year, we'll be able to settle down. But it's just hoping to have a good run with injuries leading into the final series.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.